Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Welcome back in the Morning Hook. I'm having a great time on a Monday with my guy Will Wilson. We'll bring on our guest, Evan Bland, Omaha World Herald. Evan, happy Monday.
Happy Monday, gentlemen. How's it going?
We're good. We're good. Fresh off your bye week. How was it?
You know, it was pretty darn refreshing. I took a couple of days and, of all things, went to New York City with a friend.
Woo!
And, you know, wrote a little bit, but man, I thought there was a bit of a, you know, the mental break thing is very much real. And so I'm re-energized, ready for this home stretch. Should be fun.
So many people say New York is like the food capital of the world. I mean, did you experience any of that?
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's such a wide range. You can do a $3 hot dog at a food truck all the way up to, you know, $60 plates and beyond. Had a steak. I think they said it was an Omaha steak, actually. So it turned out to be pretty well. You know, those things kind of follow you around wherever you go. But, yeah, man, I mean, any kind of, you know, type of food that you want, it's probably within like three blocks or one subway stop from where you are. So I can see how people get pretty spoiled out there.
Yeah, it is a pretty eclectic place. Well, we're glad you're back because you're refreshed, mentally ready to go. Nebraska baseball. What can you tell us about the big kid? 6'6", like 230, pitcher out of Wyoming?
Yeah, Bradley Feather was one of their more recent additions. He's a 2023 kid. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's different from football, right, where in football you're talking about kids who are going to be on campus in a year or so. Feather won't be, you know, a guy who would be even on the field for Nebraska until 2024. But I think the thing that stands out about him, you know, he's one of the higher-rated kids in Wyoming. I think he's the number two prospect, according to most outlets. But, you know, so often you have to take with a grain of salt any statistics that these guys might have. But the thing that that always translates is command. So what kind of strikeouts do you have against? How many walks do you put out? And this guy has numbers that kind of reminded me a little bit of Spencer Schwellenbach out of high school. I mean, I think he had 95 innings this summer, 145 Ks, and like 26 walks, which just tells you that he can fill up the zone, and that's a great start when you're talking about getting going in college baseball. You know, it's kind of interesting. Nebraska's had a number of different commits in the last few weeks, mainly generated on the strength of their official visits for the Northwestern and Michigan football game weekends. Mm-hmm. And so I would expect probably some more activity here in the coming weeks, this weekend with Purdue and then next weekend with Ohio State. And, you know, they're quietly filling this thing up. I mean, they're up to, I think, 9 commits in 2022. 8 or 9 in 2023, and they're working even on some classes beyond that. So it's been an active, busy sort of stretch for these guys. And you know, I'll give you a kind of a preview of something I'm going to write for probably later this week. Is it sort of continues this pattern of this staff really? They know what they want to get, and they'll go out and offer kids like Feaser who maybe have interest from a lot of top programs, but they don't have offers from these guys. And so Nebraska often has been that first team or at least the biggest offer that a lot of these players have had, and then that ends up leading to a commitment down the road. So it's part strategy, but it's part conviction too on the part of the staff that says this is what we're looking for. These guys cross off you know, those criteria that we're looking for, and then they put out an offer. And anyone who follows you know, football recruiting at Nebraska would know that an offer on the football side sort of starts the dialogue that says, hey, come to our campus for an official visit, and then maybe we can, you know, add you later on. For baseball, if you get an offer from Nebraska, you can commit at any time. That's how convicted they are about the prospects that they put out there.
Hey, you brought up a great point there, because I said this because Will brought up CJ, and I'm like, man, those stats are crazy good. How hard is it to dissect? You look at the stats, and you're like, okay, what was the competition level like? Because I think that's a question a lot of people will look at, especially if you don't know enough about like Wyoming baseball and stuff like that. Is that difficult to break down and get an assessment on for you?
No doubt. I mean, you have to put it all into context for sure. I mean, Feaser's numbers were coming from his kind of the Wyoming version of Legion ball mm-hmm. for what Nebraska would have. And so they travel around the region and play some decent competition. So I think there's, you know, you can put some credit into that. There are some players that when they commit, I'll reach out to the coach and say, hey, you know, do you have any kind of numbers? And they'll honestly come back and say, no, we don't, because the competition level just, it's not accurate at all to what their ability level is. And then sometimes you have guys like Chase Mason, who committed last year from South mm-hmm. Dakota. You know, he was absolutely killing it. But the baseball, the level of baseball in South Dakota is such that really does inflate those numbers. And so in those cases, you have to fall back on what do they do at some of these national showcases? What are some of their measurables in terms of agility, speed, power, things like that? And then, you know, the other thing that the staff looks for is the intangible stuff. How competitive are you? Do you bring it every day? Do you bring it every pitch? And sometimes that's hard to parse through, but you put all that together, and that's sort of maybe the beginning of the discussion on how you evaluate some of these high school prospects.
We're talking to Evan Bland. So, Evan, this is interesting to me because, you know, a lot of times when you have a new coach come in, you have some, you know, leftover talent from the previous coach, and especially when you have a coach like Erstad who just retires, you know, some of that talent will stick around. And, you know, we saw some of that talent really do good these past few seasons. It really helped Nebraska, you know, get into the postseason. Now we're seeing some of that talent leave, and we're seeing a lot more new faces come in. You know, is this kind of a period where fans may need to be patient? Because I feel like we got lucky here early in the Bolt era, saw a lot of success, but some of those guys are gone. So is this a time to kind of be patient and let Bolt get his guys in and kind of build something starting with this season?
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. So, like, it's been interesting because Bolt's first year gets wiped out mostly because of COVID. And that team, in my opinion, was not a postseason team. I mean, they did not have much pitching. You could see that in some of the non-conference games that they played. But we never had to sort of go through that and observe that team because the year got wiped out. And so they were able to take advantage of that year and supplement that 2021 team with some talent in the offseason before that. And now, you're right, it's interesting because a lot of that high-end talent that was there that staff inherited has moved on. And so, to me, that's one of the storylines of this next season is what sort of program is Nebraska? Because if you look at the top-level national programs in college baseball, what you're going to make a regional just about every year. You're going to lose part of your recruiting classes to the draft every year. You're going to lose pieces of your roster to the draft every year. And you're going to at least make a regional and find a way to compete. And so is that sort of the level that Nebraska is at here? And I think this is a good season to sort of see if that's the case. Because like you said, all the high-end guys have moved on. Spencer Schwellenbach's not coming back through the door. Pekay Povich, same thing. Joe Acker, Mojo Hagee, all these guys have moved on. And so how good a job has the staff done at bringing in talent, and then how good of a job will they continue to do in developing that talent so that they can replace these guys the way that you see at some top-level schools. And so I think, you know, there's still roles to be defined, and I think a lot of the development, individual development, is going on right now. This is the sort of thing that happens after the Red-White series up until Thanksgiving. There's a lot of individual work that occurs, and then we'll see what they come back with in the spring. But, you know, the pitching side to me still is up in the air. I think they have a lot of possibilities. I don't know that they have a frontline Friday guy the way they did in Povich last year. They may. It might be a guy like Mason Ornelas. It might be Shea Shaneman taking that next step. We don't really know yet. But, you know, that's a possibility. And then on the hitting side, it feels to me like they're going to be able to replace those pieces pretty well from what we've seen in the fall. Guys taking the next step like Bryce Matthews and Max Anderson, they have some freshmen and some transfers. I think that'll be fairly impactful too. So I think at the least, as of what we know right now, I would look at next year and say at the least Nebraska would be contending for an at-large spot in the NCAA tournament. And, of course, they're going to tell you they want to host and take that next step and everything like that. you know, you can't rule it out. But I think, again, the baseline for this program moving forward has to at least be contending for the Big Ten and being on the bubble for a regional.
Evan, one more in baseball. You mentioned that they were already getting not just next year or the year after, but the, you know, you got one. You got a commit from the 24 class in Jayshawn Unger, kid out of Blair, Nebraska. Right-handed pitcher, also to play a corner infield spot. I mean, a young kid seems way early in the process, but we know how recruiting goes now in these days. What can you tell us about Jayshawn?
Yeah, another two-way player that that Nebraska thinks could contribute either way. That's also, I think, part of a trend of what you're seeing with Nebraska baseball recruiting is if guys have the potential to be two-way guys. Nebraska has no qualms about saying, yeah, we're going to give you a chance either way. I mean, they did that. I mean, you don't have to look too far back to see the success that Jake Myers had, that Spencer Schwellenbach had, both two-way guys. So I think that's attractive to some of these guys who maybe aren't ready to commit to just being a hitter or just being a pitcher. And, you know, Unger is one of those guys. It's significant. He's significant, I think, especially in the fact that it starts off this 2024 class with an in-state flavor. He's up from Blair, grew up in a baseball family, has some velocity. I think his fastball touches 90. Somebody who is projectable too, just to contribute in a lot of different ways. And you know, when I spoke with him about a week ago or so, he was excited about his 2024 class. I mean, he's you know, part of this crop of in-state prospects who are going to get some major looks, like from SEC programs, from all over the place. And so he feels like committing to Nebraska can kind of set the tone or set a foundation for that class and what's to come from there. And again, it's so far in the future, right? No, because these guys won't even be on the field at the earliest until 2025. So you're definitely playing the long game there. But again, like, you can just see sort of the formula playing out where the staff believes that there's talent in this state. And I think when you see some of the other places in-state talent is gone, I think that's true. And then you add on to that talent sort of a pride or a passion for playing for your hometown school. And you can see how this could look sort of like it did in the 2000s when you had a lot of in-state players who helped Nebraska into super regionals and College World Series. And so that's sort of the approach. The staff believes that there's enough talent in-state to at least, you know, make that sort of your foundation or your core of the class, and then you build from there. And so I think that's what we're seeing with Unger and the start of that 2024 group.
We're talking to Evan Bland. Evan, you mentioned Jake Myers, and it's been super fun to watch him all season. He's been starting some games in the postseason, which says a lot. I mean, is this guy proven that he's here to stay for a while here in the majors?
I think so. I mean, it'll be interesting. I think today or tomorrow is when you have to lock in your World Series rosters, and so it remains to be seen whether Myers will be on that. He had that head injury in the divisional series round, so we'll see if he's able to go. It sounds like, just kind of reading some reports, that he might not be, unfortunately, but you don't know. I guess we'll find out in the next day or so. But yeah, I mean, the key with Myers and anybody who gets called up is it's that first month or so, because you're getting your chance, and if you don't contribute, you're limited at bats. You know, more often than not, you're going back into AAA and back into the minors. And so, especially if you're a prospect that maybe didn't have a high draft pick invested in you the way it was with Myers, I think he was a sort of middle round, you know, mid-teens, mid to late teens, if I remember right, when he was drafted. And so to have the hot start that he did, to contribute defensively, to contribute with power, with some clutch hits, I mean, that buys you a lot of leash and a lot of leeway in the majors, and I think he earned that in his first month up in the majors. Now, yeah, I mean, he's been a major part of their run. It's a really cool deal to see his team in the World Series. You hope maybe he'll get to be a part of it. He certainly was part of the playoff push in the early playoff rounds. I think he had their first RBI of the postseason this year. So, yeah, it's cool. I mean, there aren't a ton of Nebraska, former Nebraska baseball players in the majors right now, especially after Alex Gordon retired. So it's pretty cool to see another outfielder stepping in and, you know, making some memories.
Too bad it's for the Astros, being the Braves fan that I am. Evan, one more on baseball, because it's a unique situation, is the scholarship situation for baseball, because there's all the partial stuff. And, like, don't they have, like, 11.4 or something? Like, it's some weird number, right, of scholarship stuff?
If so, yeah, 11.7.
Like, 11.7, okay. it's so unique because it's on the baseball side. How do they divide that up? Because you have, what, 25 or more guys?
Yeah, if you're on scholarship, you have to have a 25% minimum, a 25% of a scholarship minimum, and then you can spread that across 27 different players. So if you want to, if you really feel strongly about a kid, you can give them a full scholarship, but then that leaves you with 10.7, I suppose, to spread over the other 26 guys. So it is. It's a very complicated situation. Oftentimes it's supplemented by academic scholarships that players might have. Sometimes it's affected by, can the player's family afford to pay their own way? And then that helps another player come onto the team. And then, in the summertime, you're talking about guys who may go pro out of high school, who may go pro from your own roster. And then that opens up and, more money that can be reallocated elsewhere on the roster. So, yeah, it's a very complicated sort of deal. And honestly, I think it's pretty outdated. Mm-hmm. I think if you were to ask a lot of colleges and schools with major teams, they would say they can easily fund, 27 full scholarships or 30 or whatever you want the number to be. So it is pretty outdated. I know that's something that they're pushing across the sport at sort of a macro level. But yeah, as of right now, it's 11.7, and they just try to make do with what they can.
We're talking to Evan Bland. Evan, moving on over to football, it's been an interesting conversation, talking about Adrian, and we know he was kind of banged up during the Minnesota game. And, going into this one, knowing how Martinez, how limited he could be when he is dealing with whatever injury it is, do you think the coaches maybe have to take a hard look at this next game and think if he's not, healthier, to maybe look at a different option? Because we know that offense is definitely limited when Adrian can't be rushing and doing all that.
Yeah, it is. I think from the comments that Scott Frost gave last week, they believe that he'll be as healthy as he's been in quite a while. So I would be surprised if they felt like he wasn't ready to go. You can have the conversation about why haven't we seen more from Logan Smothers or Matt Masker or Heinrich Harburg or whoever. But, I think they believe that Martinez has been healthy enough out there. And really, I mean, we knew this before the season. We've known this for a while now. If you're going to have an offense that relies heavily on the quarterback run game, the downsides of that will include turnovers, because it's a well-known deal that if your quarterback's running the ball, there are going to be more fumbles, and there's probably going to be more injuries too, because you're taking hits. You're putting your body on the line more than if you were just a pocket passer, and so I think we've seen both of those things bear out during Martinez's career. I think in the long term, it'll be interesting to see how this offense looks different when he moves on, assuming everything else stays the same moving forward. Can Logan Smothers run the option as well as Martinez has? I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how much of what Nebraska's done is based on their personnel and how much of it is something that they want to continue moving forward. But I would be surprised, as far as the Purdue game goes, if it wasn't Martinez. Certainly, you're right. We've seen that when he's less than 100%, like he was against Minnesota, it limits what they can do. But I would anticipate, and I'm sure they'll tell us today to an extent, that he'll be the guy, and they'll expect him to make some plays.
Evan, absolutely. It's so unique, though. Like, when you saw, it was either late last night or this morning, that we were a touchdown favorite, what was your first thought?
Well, Vegas always is in the know. I've learned that, whatever their line is, generally speaking, it's pretty accurate. It's kind of like the Wisconsin Purdue game last weekend, where Purdue was the ranked team, but I really didn't feel like Wisconsin was going to lose that game, just because those teams don't necessarily. It's not a good matchup for Purdue. It's a much more physical matchup than they want to have, and Wisconsin pulled it out. So I think that's part of it too. Is even though Nebraska's dropped a couple of games to Purdue, it's not a bad matchup for Nebraska. I mean, as much as Purdue throws the ball, that's something that plays into what the defense wants to do. That plays into their strengths this year. We saw what Cam Taylor-Britt did against David Bell last year in West Lafayette, and I think he can, that's something he can do again this year. He can be that lockdown corner. This can be a weekend that he really showcases his abilities there in a way that you can't do when you're playing against a team like Minnesota that's going to just pound it at you over and over again. So I do like the matchup in terms of Purdue's offense and Nebraska's defense more than what Minnesota brought in its sort of time of possession, ground and pound style. Again, that being said, like, Nebraska's burned people so many times being a favorite, especially being a home favorite. It's really hard to trust them to live up to that role. But I can see, at least on paper, how Nebraska could be looked at as a favorite.
We're talking to Evan Bland. Evan, it's looking, you know, the Big Ten West is looking gettable every single day. You know, it was looking like Iowa was maybe going to run away with it, but now they're tied with Minnesota. I mean, would you be surprised if Minnesota came out of the Big Ten West?
I mean, based on how they started the year, sure. I mean, who loses at home to Bowling Green and wins the West? It's a hard thing to do. I mean, they've figured some things out after their injury, especially to Mo Ibrahim early on, their dynamic running back. They've figured some things out. Iowa has come back to earth a little bit. It will be interesting to see how they continue to respond. Wisconsin has had a couple of get-right weeks after a really tough start to their schedule, and maybe their offense is on track a little bit more, especially in the ground game. We'll see. So I think if you're Nebraska, it's especially frustrating because you've been so close in all of those games. And, you know, I often think back to the afternoon before Nebraska played Michigan State when everybody sort of looked mortal. I mean, Minnesota had lost to Bowling Green. Wisconsin had lost. Iowa was in a tight one with, I think it was Colorado State. And it was just like, man, everything was very much on the table for Nebraska to make a run in the West and to contend and make things really interesting over the last month of the year. Obviously, it didn't turn out that way, but I think it does sort of complicate the conversation when you talk about what's the status of this Nebraska team, what can you expect from them moving forward into 2022. I think part of the conversation has to be, you know, they were a few plays, a few points, a few kicks from contending for the West and being realistic, possibilities to take that thing home. So as complicated as this team has been, I think that just sort of adds to the discussion as we figure out what these Huskers are and what they can be.
Evan, do you have any feeling on right now? Obviously, there's some. Obviously, the question is, you know, the way the season's gone so far, 3-5. There's been some ticket programs going on for this Purdue game. Any feeling either way, what the environment might be like on Saturday?
Yeah, it'll be. I mean, I think it depends on how you start the game. It sort of reminds me a little bit of Northwestern a few weeks ago, where, you know, they had the best possible start, and it turned into sort of a party and a celebration by the second half. Mm-hmm. Purdue, you know, could be something like that if you start strong. If you don't, if you fall behind 10-0 and, you know, you're down 20-3 at the half or something like that, then it gets, you know, grumbly, and you hear people are getting restless. And mm-hmm. I think part of what was so interesting about last year is that you didn't have the crowds in the stands for some of those moments. You think of Illinois at home, you think of Minnesota at home in 2020. I mean, those were bad, ugly losses that in some ways I remember thinking at the time, like, man, maybe it's a good thing that there wasn't a crowd here, because that would have really added to the negative vibes of what was going on. And so this game sort of has a wide range of outcomes to me. I mean, if they start slow and things get ugly, which is possible, then that's a game that you can remember for all the wrong reasons. But again, if they start strong, then suddenly, you know, the Ohio State game looks a little more interesting, and suddenly, you know, you can take some of the edge off of what's been a pretty rough last 2 weeks. So 2:30 kick, you can kind of expect a little bit of everything. It's not going to be a sleepy crowd, but it's not going to be sort of that evening electric crowd either. It's a very fascinating game, because I think there's a whole range of outcomes that we could end up remembering this game for.
All right, when it's all said and done, which part of the coaching staff is going to be happier? Obviously, Coach Bolton, Coach Harvell are well-known Astro fans, or Coach Christie, who's a man just like me, a huge Braves fan. Which set's going to be happier?
You know, I was a guy who back in the day, I wanted the Brewers and the Rays to meet in the World Series. You know, I wanted the nightmare for TV executives there. So all these favorites meeting up, I'm not crazy about either team, to be honest. But, man, it's so tough, because I think Houston's the more talented team, but the Braves have some they have some karma going right now. They have just sort of a Team of Destiny vibe to them a little bit. But I don't know. I'll be cynical today and say that the Astros pull it out with some of the talent and the home field advantage.
Yeah, they're a very talented team, and I think they're outproving a lot of people trying to get that, you know, all that crap they went through off their back. So, Evan, appreciate your time, man. Thanks for coming on with us on a Monday. Have a great rest of your week, sir.
Hey, thanks, guys. See ya.
Evan Blanham, Hard World Hill right there. Good stuff. Real good stuff, man. Boy, baseball is just keep, like you said, they're putting stuff together.
Yeah.
They're looking ahead, and I like that he said that the staff knows what they want, and they're out to go get it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they have to, because like we discussed, you know, a lot of them players that were good were Erstad's players, and they're gone now. So now we got to see what Bolt can do on the recruiting side, and you know, this is now it's time to do what most new coaches do right when they get here, you know. But because of all the leftover players,
yeah,
you know, it's happened a little late.
Yeah, he's utilizing well. That isn't that interesting about the scholarship situation?
Yeah.
You have 11.7 to distribute amongst 27 or so kids.
0.7?
Can you imagine being the person that's got to calculate that?
That's
and
just
ask
stupid.
Those questions?
Why is it even at that point?
It doesn't make any sense. I had a great coach, Todd, was texting me, and he said, it is unique because you can have like the third string cornerback. Right, on a football team, it's on scholarship, but your starting second baseman might be on a fourth of a ride.
Maybe not even on scholarship.
Maybe not even on scholarship, right? Because, like Evan said, if your family can't afford it, well, why don't you help us out, not take any of the money?
Also, knowing how many players there are on a college baseball roster,
yeah,
like 11.7.
That's how you distribute it. That's what they got.
Jeez, yeah, that's stupid. Change that.
It is outdated. So. Wrapping up the first hour, 9 o'clock keyword, Buccaneers, BUCCA. Oh my God, ANEERS.
I knew it.
I got worried.
I would have put, listen, I'll be honest, I probably would put one C.
It made me nervous. BUCCANEERS, Buccaneers.
Buccaneers.
Lincoln.com right now for some free chance at free cash. $1,000, man.
The Big Ten West is interesting, man.
It is.
Looking at how things align right now, and again, it's I don't know if you've seen this yet, if you're listening, but Minnesota and Iowa are tied at the top of the Big Ten West at 3-1.
Isn't that just...
And if you look at both their schedules, actually, to end the season, it's very similar. Both schedules aren't necessarily hard. Iowa goes to Wisconsin this week. Then they go to Northwestern, and then they host Minnesota. They host Illinois, and then they obviously end the season with us.
Yeah.
So arguably, Iowa may have a tougher schedule than Minnesota to end the season.
I mean, you can't count out Wisconsin either, can you? At 2-2?
No, but I'd like to think, I don't know, let me see what Wisconsin has up
they
next.
They go, this is what Wisconsin does the rest of the way out. They go Iowa this weekend.
Okay.
Rutgers, Northwestern, Nebraska, Minnesota.
Okay.
They get the two top guys still.
Yeah. In Minnesota, they have Northwestern, Illinois, Iowa. They go to Indiana, which may be, you know, a tough game there. And then they end, you know, against Wisconsin. So it is going to be shaken up.
It's the wild, wild west. It is the wild, wild west. So we'll have so we'll talk more about that. We'll have West Training at 10 coming up. You got your 9 o'clock keyword. We're going to talk some NFL, the week that was. Will give us some totals on how we did again this week. And it sounds like I had another good week. Another good week out there. We'll talk a little World Series as the Braves and the Astros. We'll get that thing going. I believe it's Tuesday night. Tuesday night, Braves and Astros. We'll kick off. Big sports week, man. Big sports week, like we said. You got volleyball. You got exhibition basketball. You got charity basketball on Sunday. You've got football at 2:30. You got a lot of stuff going on this week. World Series starts on Tuesday.
Chop on.
I'm going to get nothing done probably. So, all right, let's take a break and come back. What's trending at 10?